It's all about brands.
This is Build and Analyze, a weekly news and discussion show about the world of iPhone, iPad, iOS, mobile web development, and so, so much more. The show is hosted by Marco Arment. He is the creator, the founder, the man behind Instapaper. And I'm Dan Benjamin. Today is Monday, August 20th, 2012. This is episode number 91. We would like to thank Hover.com, IgluSoftware.com, and CodeSchool.com for making this show possible. We would also like to say a special thank you to SourceBits.com, providing software design and development services for iPhone, mobile, Mac, and the web, and of course, iPad too. They use something called design-led engineering. They'll take your idea, your concept for an app, it will turn it into something that is awesome. And they've done this for more than 500 applications, mobile, web, and desktop platforms. Go check these guys out. Longtime sponsor of the show, and we sure do appreciate it. SourceBits.com. How do you feel today?
Pretty good.
Strong?
Yeah, it's a little early, but I'm all right.
What's on your mind today to talk about? What would you care to discuss today?
Well,
this is the show. I mean, we're on now.
This is it. Good.
This is the show.
All right. I was going to talk about Twitter and their stuff, but Syracuse covered all that. So maybe I'll talk about Mountain Lion.
Yeah, he's not really talked about that very much at all.
Yeah, it's going to be old news.
Yeah, it's old news.
Damn his Friday time slot.
that almost never works in his favor, to be honest.
I know, that's true.
This is like the one time in, I don't know, 2 years that he's actually had to jump on anybody. But what's going on? What happened with Twitter? It's still worth talking about because I'd like to get your take on this. It's important. I know you were kidding, but I mean, let's
I don't give a crap about Mountain Lion.
That's right. Are you? Hey, by the way, have you even upgraded? Are you even using
it? I do. Yeah, I'm using it. It just doesn't matter. I mean, it's basically like a 10.7.5. Like it. I don't really care.
Yeah.
I'm using it. It's fine. You know what? I haven't had Preview do its failure to resume bug that always happened to me on Lion.
Can you re-describe the bug?
It would be like if you had Preview running, and let's say you hit it, because I always hide things. I don't minimize them. I just hide them. And there's a document open. So normally what will happen on Lion is it will suspend that app and terminate it and just resume it when you go back.
Right.
So when next time you go back to Preview, it would try to resume that document, and it would gray out the document and show a little spinner, but it would just get stuck there, and it would just lock. And you'd have to force quit it. And then relaunch it. And it was ridiculously annoying. And this happened in every single version of Lion. That it happened to me every single version, every point release. And they always would say, oh, that's going to be fixed. And then it would never be fixed. But it hasn't happened yet in Mountain Lion. So I'm very happy about that.
I guess they fixed something.
We actually are talking about Mountain Lion.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. So about this Twitter stuff, there's certainly a lot to say here. So I'm going to say it all now. definitely, I think people who are interested in talking about or hearing people talk about this Twitter stuff should listen to Hypercritical from last weekend or from Friday, because John Syracuse did talk about a lot of stuff about this. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't the whole episode about this. I still have like 30 minutes left of it, but I'm pretty sure the whole episode's going to be about it.
Yeah, it wound up, I mean, that wasn't his goal, but that's
right.
That's what happens.
Amazingly, I haven't had time to listen to all of the 2-hour podcast in the last 2 days.
The long one.
Yeah. But, there's a few angles to this Twitter thing. One is that a lot of people are saying in this backlash, whatever magnitude this backlash is, which I'm pretty sure is too small for them to give a crap, but a lot of the commentary about this is saying, oh, well, now they have to make money. And that people are saying, oh, Twitter has to do this because they have to make money.
Well, don't they? I mean, they've taken a lot of investment, and
right.
You would say they have to, right?
So there's a few sides to this. First of all, and a lot of people have also said they have to pay back their investors. It's worth clarifying for anybody who doesn't know that investment is not a loan. When you take VC money, you don't have to pay it back.
Can you explain how this works? Because there's most of the time you hear about the VC money, but there's also angel. There's an angel investment. There's VC investment. You've got some experience with this. What's the difference? Let's jump into this for a minute.
I mean, I should point out my experience is not with arranging the funding myself, but my experience is simply in being part of a funded company. And that was Tumblr, of course. You know, from what I understand, which I'm pretty sure is correct in this case, when you go around seeking funding, or when VCs come to you seeking to invest their money, what you are doing is you are selling them a portion of your company, and it might be before your company even exists. That's usually the very first round. Usually, you might have a proof of concept. You might even just have nothing. You might just have the promise. But they are basically buying a portion of your company from you, which is very different from a loan. You know, a loan is they give you money based on some collateral, and then you have to pay it back. That's not the case here. They're literally just buying a part of your company, and you never have to pay them back that money. Now, the reason they're buying a part of your company is that they expect that there's going to be a reasonable chance, not necessarily a great chance, but you know, a chance of your company being worth a lot more in the future. So when you go around raising money, what you're saying is, here's my idea, or here's my prototype, here's what I'm going to build, and here's the numbers I've run or the research I've done to show that I'm pretty sure this has a good chance of being worth X in the future, or of getting this many users, or of having this kind of income in the future. And so they do want to get paid back in the sense that they want their investment to be worth more in the future. However, that is not an obligation. Like, there's not like a legal contract saying you must pay them their money back. So like it's a similar kind of goal, but with different implementation details and different side effects. Furthermore, they're not looking to just get 100% of their money back, or some 6% interest on it or anything. The way VC in this industry usually works, I'm not sure about others, but it's probably not that different. But in this industry, the way VC usually works is the VC firms expect, and by the way, we should point out where this money comes from. For the most part, VC money is required to be from accredited investors, which usually means rich people. So you can't have some school teacher in Ohio investing their retirement fund. You know, that usually is not enough money. You have to be an accredited investor to directly put your money into these things, which usually means, I think, that you have to have a couple of years in a row of $250K income per year or more, or you have to have some amount of money in the bank. It's probably a few million dollars, something like that. And I should point out that my mom is a school teacher who was in Ohio until a few weeks ago. That's actually why I pulled that reference.
Not a totally random reference.
No. And I'm very, very familiar with the educational system and the teachers and everything. My sister's a teacher too. Not in Ohio though. So, it's rich people or big, funds like hedge funds and other types of like riskier than normal investments. They give their money to VC firms like raise a fund. They raise a big pool of money. Usually it's like in bursts, or it's a one-time raise. And I'm sorry if I'm getting the details of this side wrong, because this is the side that I know the least about. But basically they get this money from rich people, and the VC firm is responsible for investing it somehow. Now, one of the reasons why there's been such an influx of VC in the last decade or so, and especially in the last 5 years, is because if you're a rich guy and you have a lot of money, you want to invest it in something, there's not a lot out there that you can invest in and get good returns these days. The whole stock market is crap. The bank investments and like CDs are terrible. Bonds are pretty terrible. There are very few investments you can make that reliably return good returns these days. You can get very conservative and get almost no money, and maybe just barely stay ahead of inflation with like bank stuff and bonds, or you can, go to the crazy risky stuff that usually only rich people even have access to, because they have minimums. Like some of these funds, the minimum you can invest is like $100,000 or more. So, it's this kind of source of where the money comes from. Now, because there's nothing else good to invest in, rich people have put a lot of their money into VC recently because that's something that could provide some value and could potentially provide a lot more than their other options. So there's a whole lot of supply of VC money because even though that we're gutting the middle class in our society, the rich people are richer than ever. So there's a whole lot of money wanting to be invested here. So the VC firms are responsible for taking these big pools of money they raise and figuring out where the heck they can invest them to get some kind of return. Now, that being said, they know that most of what they invest in is going to lose money. I've always heard, and I don't know how true this is, I've always heard that the expected hit ratio is something like 1 in 10, that about 1 in 10 tech-type VC investments would make a big profit enough to support the other 9 that lose money or that just barely make anything. So anyway, I don't want to get too far into that because that's not really the discussion here. So Twitter does not have to pay back their investors. What their investors want is for Twitter to be massive, for Twitter to be huge. And investors, when they do cash out, the way they usually do it is what they call an exit, which is one of my favorite terms, along with sunset.
Sunset.
An exit usually leads to a sunset in the near future. But an exit is when the investors and or the founders of the company can leave and can basically exit their investment in that company. That the founders can cash out their shares and make a whole bunch of money and possibly go on to something else. The investors can or are forced to cash out their shares and make all their money back and figure out, give it all to the rich people and then invest more in something else. And an exit usually is when a company is either acquired by another bigger company, like if Google buys your little web startup for, $50 million, that's an exit for everybody involved. And then Google will sunset it 6 months later. An exit also could be an IPO. If you get big enough, an IPO is kind of an exit in that it allows the investors and the founders to really start making a lot of money by selling off large portions of their shares. But you really can't do that while you're still private. You can do it, on smaller scales and it's kind of limited and it's kind of weird and I don't know that much about that, but you can really make a lot of money with an IPO. So that's kind of the goal that investors have when they invest in a company like this is they want 1 in 10 of their investments to get so big that they can either get bought by somebody or have a big IPO and they can cash out. That's the whole point. Then they can go back to the rich people, give them their returns, keep their jobs, and start again. That's the whole idea. So, and note how little of that has to do with how good the product gets or what the users care about. that's a big thing.
Right.
None of that really has a lot
it's
to do with...
It's all independent of that.
No one's asking the users, hey, what do you want us to do? that doesn't matter at all. So anyway, what Twitter has to do, Twitter does not have to make money. Twitter already is making money. They're making tons of money. Most people don't realize that. Twitter is profitable by all measures. As far as they don't have to reveal much because they're not a public company yet. But from what we know, as press people and feeling around and the few things that we do know from their people, all indications point to Twitter is already profitable. And from what I understand, they're very profitable. So that's not the problem. The problem, and by the way, they're profitable not by charging people money and not even by showing ads down all the third-party clients. They're profitable just by what they're doing now. Before their douchey announcement, they're already profitable. Okay. What they need, though, their investors don't want them to be profitable the way they are now because now it's a success. It's like a success the way Instapaper is a success, where Instapaper makes good money for one guy, but this would not be good money for Facebook. What Twitter wants is to make orders of magnitude more money than what they're making now. They want to be much, much more profitable and much, much bigger. Now, by growth, as Syracuse pointed out, they're going to start hitting like the Facebook limit pretty soon. Of Facebook has hundreds of millions of users by now, right? And like Facebook is starting to push the boundaries of how many people even exist on the planet who have a computer or a computing phone and data service. Like they're really pushing the limits of how many people can possibly be signed up for such a thing. And Twitter is probably going to get there fairly soon, you know, in the relatively speaking, in the relative terms of these, fairly soon, right? So Twitter is not going to really have massive user growth forever, like percentage-wise. It's not going to be massive user growth forever. What they need, therefore, is to make a lot more money from the people they already have. And to do that, I think they're looking right at Facebook. And it's one of the reasons the companies really hate each other, besides their past of blocking each other from their services. They need to make a lot of money, and they're looking at Facebook for how. Now, Facebook isn't necessarily that good at it either. I mean, right now their stock is at an all-time low. I mean, all-time being, they've only been public for a few weeks.
Yeah, but it's what percentage of it? What's the latest on
this? I believe they're at $19 now.
Yeah.
And wasn't the opening price in the 30s?
Yeah.
I think like the first, wasn't the IPO price something like 34 or something like that? I don't know. Anyway, so Twitter is looking at Facebook because Facebook...
Yeah, it's currently half of the IPO.
So William says it was 38. That's, wow.
Yeah,
that's
it was
rough.
A $38 so IPO and it is $18.98 in morning trading this morning.
Yeah, that's rough. I bought a very small amount of it a couple of weeks ago when it hit 20, figuring that was probably the bottom.
Right.
I'm glad I only bought a very small amount. anyway. So whatever you can say about Facebook, I think Facebook's money-making rates are a little bit questionable because I think the intent, like the purchasing intent is really not there when people are browsing Facebook, and that's kind of a problem. And Twitter's going to face that problem too. However, you can look at Facebook and you can say, wow, they are really good at monetizing, as much as we hate that word, they're really good at monetizing their site and their service. They really, really are good at it. If Facebook can sell a little like pixel in a corner somewhere, they'll sell it. Like if they can sell the creepiest, most intimate data about you that they've gotten through weird means of embedding an iframe on all the sites on the internet and then measuring your cookie rate and all this, like they will sell that. They will sell everything at Facebook is for sale to the advertisers. Everything. And forgive me if that's not entirely true. It's roughly like relative to Twitter. A lot of it's for sale. And Twitter is in this weird spot where, you know, Twitter's product is very different from Facebook's product. Twitter's product does not really prompt people to dump a whole bunch of their personal information in there all the time. You can do that, but like on a social network, the reason why everybody gave Facebook all their information, their real name, the school they went to, where they work, all this stuff, their gender, all this stuff, is because the reason people use Facebook motivates them to share all that information so that they can use it. Like people use Facebook, you know, to find people to date, to look up old classmates, to possibly make job connections, although who knows how often that happens. But Facebook as a product, the users are highly encouraged to give them a whole bunch of their personal information to make the product useful to them. And most people are happy to do it. Twitter, on the other hand, is not. Twitter is a lot more like AOL Instant Messenger or AIM, you know, as the geeks call it.
Right.
As you say.
Yeah. I do say that.
Me too. and AIM, I think, is a very, very good comparison for a lot of things here with Twitter. Because what happened with AIM, so AOL has this chat network, and for people who are more nerdy than us, think of it as something like ICQ. For people who are less nerdy than us, think of it as Yahoo Messenger, but by AOL. And for people who are living in Mountain View, think of it as Google Chat, but before Google got there.
Right.
anyway.
Very well said.
So... The problem that AIM had, and AIM is very popular as a chat network, and chat networks generally are generational. Like I remember, like in my year of school, in my school, my class all used AIM, but the class 1 year younger than me all used Yahoo, And the class 1 year younger than that used MSN Messenger. Like it was, and then like the class older than me used ICQ. It was weird. Anyway, because you know, you use what your friends use. And there's that whole network effect that actually is worth talking about later with app.net. But AIM was very successful for AOL in the sense that a lot of people used it. However, every time AOL tried to monetize it, it usually flopped. What they originally started by changing the client so that it would have ads in it. And then they started running like movie trailers in your chat, in your buddy list window and stuff. It was really weird. And not only did people hate it and people developed alternative clients, which were permitted, I think. But anyway, they existed. So lots of people used alternative clients to avoid the ads and crap. The ads were so bad that... who's the Nullsoft guy? I forgot his name. The guy who makes Winamp. Justin Franco?
I've got to look it up. But that sounds right.
Anyway, that guy who made Winamp.
Yeah, Justin Frankel.
Justin Frankel, yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
That's him.
He worked for AOL because AOL bought Nullsoft. And he released an app. I forget what it was called. He released an app quietly that would overlay the ads on the AIM client. It would like inject into their executable and overlay the ads with a graphical equalizer for whatever music was playing in Winamp. So he, while he was working for AOL, who bought his company, released an app that would block the ads in AOL's chat client. It was amazing. Yeah, he was a professional at angering AOL.
It talks about a little bit of this. I'll put it into the show notes. Talks about this the source of all correct knowledge on Wikipedia. But he has a little bit of this in there. I'll drop that in the show notes. Isn't that funny, though? I mean, can you believe that?
It was amazing.
Did he get away with it?
I used it. I don't know. It was hilarious because I was still using the AIM. I was still on Windows at the time. I was using the official AIM client. All right, so AIM got very popular, but but AOL was never able to really monetize it very well. They tried, but it just the nature of a chat client, especially if they wanted to have any kind of third party access. And one of the biggest third party AIM clients is iChat. Oh, well, now it's Messages, but it was iChat until a few weeks ago.
Is that how we have to say it?
Messages. Yes. So, I think, you know, AIM is kind of the typical example of a, quote, dumb pipe kind of gone wrong on the business side. So, Twitter does not want to become that. And I think if we look at a lot of what they've done over the last couple of years, especially with this developer relations stuff, they really don't want to become the dumb pipe because the dumb pipe can't make a lot of money. That's basically it. If the core of the experience, if the interface people are using, what they're seeing is not a client or environment controlled by you, the pipe providers, then you're a dumb pipe. That's why you see cell phone companies trying to have all their crap all over all the phones. That's why they like Android so much. They can put all their crap there. You can have like the AT&T Navigator thing and the Verizon whatever TV on, you know, what do they call it? It's everything with Verizon is it Get It Now? Anyway, like the stuff they used to do on all their flip phones and crap
they
phones.
They do call it Get It Now.
Yeah, they've recently been, the carriers have recently been kind of forced to drop some of that just because smartphones have risen a lot and gotten more complicated. And of course, Apple said, you can't have any of that crap on the iPhone, which was really an amazing negotiation back when that happened. But anyway, carriers try to do that because they don't want to be dumb pipes because they know it isn't a very good business. ISPs try to do that too. Your local ISPs, they try to give you like their custom security software and they have their custom homepage and portal and they rope you into their email all to differentiate themselves from being dumb pipes because dumb pipes become a commodity business or in the case of something like AIM, it becomes just like this very low margin or no margin communication network. And that's no good. So Twitter wants to control the front end. They do not want to be the dumb pipe. Now, that's kind of problematic for them because they grew in part by being a dumb pipe. One of the whole reasons that we all use them is because there was this rich ecosystem of apps none of which loaded the Twitter.com webpage and showed it to you. Like, it was all these apps that had their own interfaces, oftentimes very different interfaces, usually better than what a web page could display at the technology available at the time. So this is Twitter's overall goal here, is to take back the client experience. Now, they already have most of it, because most, as far as we can tell from what people have done, you know, measurements and surveys and studies and trying to get some data analysis, from what we can tell, third-party clients represent a relatively small portion, well, not really, they represent a minority portion of Twitter usage. But people are saying that might still be like 25%, or it's in that ballpark, you know, 25% or 20% of all Twitter activity might be coming from third-party clients. And that's hard to measure, so it's we don't know that it might just be 10%, it might just be 5%, but it's enough that it's certainly enough that Twitter should care, that they should notice, hey, wait a minute, we're like, you know, say we're not controlling 20% of the interfaces that are being used here. So it's certainly worth them noticing. And this is why they've started cracking down on this. However, there's a few, I don't know, you can see where they're going is, as I said, like more towards Facebook. They're really, their whole thing with the cards interface and like how often they mention brands in that stupid blog post. You can tell that, and the whole quadrants thing, I mean, you can tell this is, they're setting things up to have a lot of partnerships with media companies and with other services. They want the New York Times paying them so that to have little New York Times embedded cards whenever somebody tweets a New York Times link with custom behavior and analytics, and New York Times wants to get their ad money somehow, so they want to figure out who's reading their tweets and pull people in and pay their subscriber and all this. There's all these like these big company partnerships. That's what Twitter's going for the most part, with these cards, and I think it's one of the reasons why the whole annotations thing kind of died. I think they wanted to go bigger with it, and so that's why they made this. It's all about brands, and it's because that's where the money is when you're in the advertising game, and they effectively are now. If they're not going to charge consumers, they're going to work out brand partnerships, and so everything they're doing is going to be to that end. Everything they're doing is going to be, how can we make that better? How can we make more money from that? What can we do that brands are going to like and want to pay us more money for? That's what Facebook does. You know, Facebook has a bit more of a generic platform for it, but that's pretty much what Facebook does. That's their business. Facebook is not in the business of charging people money to use their service. And there's a whole virtual currency thing with Facebook games. Well, Twitter's probably going to do that too. You know, this whole cards thing, Twitter's talking about like having people watch movies inside of a tweet in a special movie event or something like that. Twitter wants to move in that direction. And they are moving. There's no question. That is Twitter's future. Twitter's future is a lot like Facebook, but with the Twitter product as the base instead of the social network finding people from high school as the base. So it's worth looking at what is in conflict with that, with the third-party apps. So I think Syracuse was right that it is mostly about control. That, you know, Twitter wants, if they want to launch a new type of card or a new feature that allows brands to engage with their social metrics and their quadrants, if Twitter wants to launch something like that, they have to control the client experience. You know, what if Twitter didn't impose any of these new rules? And what if they started putting promoted tweets, which is a wonderful euphemism for ads, what if they started putting ad tweets into the timelines in the API, and there were no other requirements of how they handled them? Then I think what you'd see most clients do is probably have an option that defaulted to hidden. Right. It says
it just never shows them.
Hide the ad tweets. You know, because if clients can control the experience however they want,
yeah,
they can do that. You know, they can squash any initiative that Twitter tries to launch. And especially something, you know, once you're in the business of of the advertisers and the brands and all this crap, you start doing a lot of things that your users, if given the option not to see these things, they would say, well, yeah, don't show these to me. You know, one of the whole values of ads is to try to distract people from what they're doing, to capture their attention away from what they're doing, or in the worst cases, to annoy them or beat them over the head with your message. And so if people are given the option with a checkbox that says show the ads or not show the ads, a whole lot of people are going to say, well, don't show me the ads. And that's a tough position to be in if you're in the business of selling ads, because advertisers, first of all, obviously they want to reach as many people as possible, and that's going to affect the rate that you can charge them. But even if you have like a premium account where you can pay to get rid of the ads, even that is problematic when you're in the ad business, because then the people who have disposable income or who are really engaged with your product enough to use it constantly and really love it and really want to pay for it, those are like the prime people the advertisers want to reach, and those are the ones they're not reaching if you have this premium thing where you can pay to get rid of ads. So that's one of the reasons they don't offer this to us, by the way. But of course, another reason is the whole Syracuse theory of, I think the advertisers are willing to pay a lot more than we are. You know, like if Twitter thinks they can get $30 per user of average value out of us by selling us to advertisers, and we're only willing to pay 10, then they're going to do the advertising route. Yeah. Simple as that. You know.
Speaking of ads, let's do one of ours. We're kind of good time for it.
Yeah.
First sponsor is Code School. Have you heard of these guys, Marco? CodeSchool.com?
I don't think so.
Okay, this is pretty cool. They have an online classroom, but they have I guess what you'd call like a learn by doing approach. Instead of just throwing you out there and saying, here's some resources, they show you how to build things. And they've got courses like try Ruby, try Git. They have Rails for Zombies, a lot of cool stuff. And what it does, it combines interactive video with coding in the browser. So the guys over at Code School, they're working on a new course. You'll like this. Maybe you could take this one. Tell us how it goes, Mark. I'll get you a thing. You spend an afternoon with this. Try iOS. So what this does, it teaches you iPhone app development for iOS 6, and it features an in-browser iPhone simulator. Now, here's the thing. They need your help. They need some funding to get the ball rolling. So they have a Kickstarter project. They're trying to get help from you guys, the listeners. They're trying to raise $125,000. If they make it, they're going to create an additional course called Try Objective C that'll be available to everybody for free. So if you help them with this main one, they're going to come out with the Objective C one for free. If you help them out, Kickstarter contributions are going to fund the purchase of a Mac Mini farm for their bandwidth and all their co-location stuff. And they're going to build and scale their simulator technology. And if enough is raised, the high quality video for Objective C is going to be out there. Now, they're really close. I actually should have checked right before the show, but the last number that I have, they're at $98,424. And they've only got about a week left. We've got a URL in the show notes. Go check these guys out. You can see all their other stuff, but if you want to help them get the Objective-C thing out there and help them get this done, it's a very worthy cause. Go check it out, coldschool.com. Kickstarter. That's the way of the future.
I think it's the way of the present.
No, you're right about that. All right, please continue, sir.
So one other concern Twitter might have. So we've already established, well, I've already yelled at you establishing that they want to make a lot more money than they're making now. What they're making now is fine for a business, but Twitter wants to get even bigger money-wise.
Oh, by the way, I'm just been told from our friend of the show, Brian Stuckey, the guy that runs Mac Mini Cola, where I have my Mac Mini, that they are now at $111,000. They're so close. Cool. And they are doing the mini farm over at Mac Mini Cola. Sorry to interrupt you there. Please continue.
That's all right. So, we've already established Twitter's goals here are to make a lot more money, not just a little bit, to make a lot more money and to retain control so that they can launch new features, possibly because users won't like what they're doing every time, or just because they want control. It's important for a company like that to not become a dumb pipe. So they want to retain control and make a ton of money. There also might be an issue with trademarks. If you notice, their display guidelines, or one of those documents, the address to appeal to, if you say, like, well, I can't follow this because there's some kind of technical reason on the platform that my app runs on where this is not possible, the address that you appeal to is trademarks@twitter.com. And I wonder how much of this new requirement list, especially the display requirements, that's probably all about trademark. I bet Twitter has, like, you know, trademarked that whole thing, like the way tweets look, or they're trying to. And I don't know legally enough about this to really say what part of it would be trademarkable, but I think that's what they're going for. I think a whole lot of this is about getting and enforcing a trademark on the way tweets look and behave, and what a tweet is, what tweets are, how tweets look when they're together, how a single tweet looks when it's quoted out. By the way, that could be a big problem for app.net. Just worth pointing that out there. If this is all about trademark, or if a lot of this is about trademark, then app.net might run into issues with Twitter's trademarks.
Yeah.
I really think that any individual client, Twitter doesn't really give a crap about any individual client. What they care about is the big picture issues of anything that will hinder them from their massive ramp up to making big, big money and going public or something like that. Anything that would hinder that, or that would cause legal issues for them, like trademark dilution. So it's not about squashing Tweetbot. It's not about squashing Echo Phone. But Twitter does not give a crap about Tweetbot and Echo Phone enough to keep them working. I think what Twitter has basically said here is, you know, we don't want these things to exist because they're problematic for us, and we're going to offer you an olive branch here. We're going to offer you, out of the kindness of our heart, we're going to keep these things working if they follow our new rules, but only up to a certain number of users. Then they have to come talk to us, whatever that means. And we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, Twitter really wants to have control over the user experience. So it's also, by the way, I think this is an easy prediction to make. I would say the Twitter apps for iPad and Mac are dead. They're gone. If you enjoy either Twitter for iPad or Twitter for Mac, their official clients, enjoy them while you can. I would bet they're both. I would bet the Mac client is probably just going to be discontinued. I think they're just going to end it, because on the Mac, Twitter wants people using the website, and then on the iPad, I'm guessing they're not going to discontinue their client, but they're going to totally gut it and replace a lot of the interface with web views or web view like rendering, so that they can, because if you think about what they're doing here, they're moving a lot more towards a lot of Facebook type rendering and stuff. What they're with all these cards and their brand integrations and all the stuff they're moving to do, that's going to be a heck of a lot easier if they can render it all with HTML and JavaScript and stuff. So they don't want a whole bunch of multiple interface technologies, multiple clients that they have to write for, write all this complex stuff for. You know, it's easy to write things that just render tweets. Well, relatively easy. But once you're talking about rendering custom cards for all these publishers that, you know, if it's a link to this site, it renders like this and it has these little functionalities in them, that's going to be really hard to do without just using web views everywhere. And I suspect that's where they're going. I think the iPhone app, we're going to see a lot of that. And I think where you have more power and more screen space, like the Mac and the iPad, I think you're going to see a whole lot of web views. And, or, you know, maybe it would just be like the expanded view, but we'll see. I suspect that obviously Twitter doesn't give a crap about the Mac app. I'm kind of amazed they even bought it as part of the Tweety deal.
Maybe they didn't. But, maybe it just came along with it.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that from their actions of never updating it,
yeah,
it certainly does seem like they were not interested in the Mac app, that it just kind of came along because it was part of the Tweety company. You know, it was part of 8-bits or whatever Twitter legally bought. So anyway, I would say goodbye to those apps pretty soon. I think the iPhone app shows where they're going, which is they're restructuring everything away from the traditional, like, you know, timeline, mentions, DMs, favorites, search. Like, that's the core experience, or like the core navigation has already been restructured to their, like, connect and discover stuff in the iOS app. That's, you can look at that and say that's the future of the company right there. That's the future of all their apps.
Well, you know, let me quote you back to yourself here. This is the post that you wrote, I guess, Friday last week. And here's what you say. I sure as hell wouldn't build a business on Twitter, and I don't think I'll even build any non-trivial features on it anymore. And if I were in the Twitter client business, I'd start working on another product. You say you could have just posted that instead of your interpretation of all of the other stuff in there.
That's true. But it could have just been a link post.
Yeah. But I mean, you did a really good job of interpreting and breaking down Twitter's API changes in your article. So I put that in the show notes. But it really is ponderous to me to think that anybody would today be thinking about doing this stuff. Like, oh yeah, well, we'll build another Twitter, or we'll build something that uses Twitter as a platform. It's always been astounding to me that people were willing to do that in the first place. It just never...
Yeah, honestly, me too.
It really surprises me. It really does. Because it just... from the very beginning, the one thing that has been consistent about Twitter is that they've been very inconsistent about what they are as a company, what their revenue sources are going to be, how they're going to treat their users, what they're going to be able to let you do with your data. Every single thing that you would think of as a definition of a good platform to build against, they have done the opposite of that. And yet people, and you know, the developers, like we saw the quote from the Tweetbot guy, you know, yeah, we're fine. We should be fine. Maybe he's right. But if he's smart, he's working on something else that has nothing to do with Twitter. Because
The fact is, as long as Twitter continues to permit clients like this at all, it is a big business. Like, as long as this business continues to exist, it will be big.
Yeah, and why not be part of that? Why not have the number one Twitter client? Well, because Twitter can make you go away very easily and very quickly if they want. You know, and I think if you look at Twitter's history, they have consistently shown they're not going to play nice with anybody. They're going to do what they want to do. And you know what? That's okay. Like, people are angry at Twitter for this. Don't be angry at them for this. It's their prerogative. We're using their service for free. Most people have paid to use clients on Twitter, but nobody made them do that. They did that because they liked the experience better. Twitter doesn't want you to like that experience better. They want you to like the experience they create for you, and they want you to continue to use it. And eventually they will cross some invisible line that will start to irritate people. But it doesn't matter. I mean, you mentioned, was it you the other day who was tweeting about the app.net thing, saying that, you know, eventually Twitter's all just going to be Lady Gaga and Justin Bieber fans, and I think it already is.
No, I wouldn't have said something like that.
Never.
No, that's not my style.
But it may already be that. It really, we think of Twitter as being, because we're like the old school users and we've been around for a long time, we think of Twitter as like, well, Twitter's ours, and they're doing the wrong thing, man. They're doing the wrong thing, but it's not ours. It's never been ours.
There, you just open up a huge three cans of worms.
All right. Okay. Well, let's do our second sponsor and then we'll do the worms.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Our second sponsor, it's igloosoftware.com. We've told you about these guys before. They've come back with some really cool stuff. It's a digital workplace. You give updates, you have discussions, you share files, you do it with your team. You do it all in one place. And this, the point of this is so that it will help you at work. You stay on your task. You don't have to worry about, well, how do I tell my team about what I'm doing? How do I let my manager and my manager's manager know that what I'm working on? I just want them to leave me alone. This lets you, it makes people leave you alone, Marco. That's what it does. because it's all there. You have a team blog. You can see if someone's what they're updating with in the advertising group. You can watch the process. They have an activity. Speaking of Twitter, they have their own activity stream. So you can see files as they're being created. You can see what people are sharing with them, with the other people on the team. You can see what the clients have. You can share links. It's discussions. All of this, here's the beautiful part of this. It's all right there in one place. You don't have to go searching for it. Well, we use this app for this one thing. We use this website for this other thing. We have a Mac app that connects it. No, it's all in one place. They have the concept of channels, like hashtags, built throughout the entire platform so you can subscribe to them. You get notifications when there's new content. This is really, really smart collaboration software. And these guys are doing an amazing job of rolling out regular updates, rolling out support, keeping your information separated, but making it accessible. And it's great stuff. Pricing. People ask about pricing. It's $99 a month, but that's a team of up to 25 people. Or you can just do $12 per user. It's your choice. The special URL. Go to igloosoftware.com/5x5 and you can win the toaster. You know the toaster that we like?
The Syracuse toaster.
They are giving away a Syracuse toaster. You sign up for a 30-day free trial, get a Syracuse toaster. Potentially, you could win that. You don't have to give them a commitment or credit card or anything. You can just show up and just try to win the toaster. So try to win it. igloosoftware.com/5x5. All right, three cans of worms.
All right, number one, Twitter is who you follow. We used to see this at Tumblr all the time. Like I'd be browsing the Tumblr and people would be complaining, oh, Tumblr's all full of drama today. No, Tumblr is who you follow. Twitter is who you follow. You choose what you see there. You choose who you follow and why and how you pay attention to it. So I think it's, you can't say, oh, we're tired of Twitter being all full of Justin Bieber fans. No, that's not valid. Because unless you're Justin Williams and you have the Justin username and people keep at replying you accidentally, he has a valid complaint. Everyone else does not have a valid complaint because you don't see those people.
All right.
So Twitter is who you follow. A. All right. Can number two. Twitter can really do what it wants. As you said, like we've had this expectation that these web APIs that came about as a big part of web 2.0, that these web APIs would be open and free forever. And we're building things and mashing things up and everything's going to be happy and integrated and no one's ever going to want money or to shut us down. And I think I that was never true.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people bought into that mindset and it was sold. You know, I can't blame them. It was really sold hard to us. Every time somebody would launch an API, that was kind of how it would be presented. Like you can now build on our platform and synergize your product with our product and we can go have brands together, like whatever. There was all this rhetoric about APIs being these free open things and everything had to be open. Well, you know, Google started telling us that open was BS a couple of years ago. And I think, you know, well, they started implying that at least and their actions started saying that. And I think what we've really seen is that no API is ever open. Nothing is ever free. Nothing is ever going to last forever. And Twitter is really one of the very few. I've had this in my mental drafts folder for blog posts for months. Twitter was a special case. Can you think of any other like web service like this where the API was so full featured and well supported and well used that people made a whole bunch of third-party front-end clients for it? Has that ever happened?
Yeah, that's a great point.
Besides Twitter, like I'm pretty sure this is the only, or this it's certainly the biggest time that's ever happened. It might even be the only time it's ever happened. So, all right, people in the chat are saying Google Maps. The Google Maps API was always severely restricted. I wouldn't really classify that in as what I'm talking about here. So if you think that's an example of what I'm talking about, then I explained the idea wrong. But you know, the whole idea here is Twitter created this environment where anybody could come in and replace the Twitter front end with whatever they wanted and make and sell an app that did that. And that is really the That's the fluke here. That's very unusual, and I'm pretty sure that's certainly it hasn't happened so far, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen again. And I think it was probably unreasonable for all of us geeks and people who use these apps and services to expect this would continue forever. Because as we spent the first half of the show talking about, this goes against a lot of Twitter's best interests now. It was good at the time. It was good to boost Twitter's user base and to boost the interactions. But now that's not really the case anymore. Twitter no longer needs us. So the third part of this is that I've seen a lot of people criticize Twitter's move like this because it's going to turn off the geeks like us, and we're so important. We're gonna lead the revolution out of Twitter, and they have to keep us happy because otherwise we're gonna all leave and take everyone with us. We're gonna start the next big thing, and that might be true. I don't think so. The thing is, we geeks are actually pretty bad customers for Twitter at this point. If you think about it, what Twitter wants now is they want people to be connecting and discovering, which is what we don't do.
Right.
They want people to use all the hashtags that are on TV, and they want us to tweet at Justin Bieber and to get our tweets, try to get them on CNN and to engage with all their other three quadrants products and services. And most importantly, they want us using their website and their own official apps where they can show us all their ads. They can promote their tweets to us. And once they start rolling out these other new features, we're going to see them all right there in their app. They can get all the data from us. They can sell all of our data. We're interacting with their brands and engaging with their social identities and all that crap. That's Twitter's best customers, not us. We are low profit, probably. We are fickle and we're whiny.
Yeah.
I mean, we are the worst customers, probably. I mean, if you think about the amount of money Twitter makes from us versus what they're going to make from other people, we're basically spammers to them. Like, we're not that far above just random spam bots in the value that we are giving Twitter with their new priorities.
And this infuriates, you're absolutely right. And this is exactly the kind of thing that those of us who have been here all along, who get angry and say, we built Twitter. We made it what it is today. We're the ones that built these clients. And, you know, the Twitter app, which they now, want to make everybody use and be ubiquitous. This is the very app that was created by a fan of Twitter. And we built it. We made it. Well, do they owe us? Don't they owe us something then, Marco? Don't they owe us, those of us? No.
I think we did all of that under the implied value contract or whatever words MBAs apply to this situation. We did all of that under the premise that they have this free service. In exchange for us using their free service, we'll try to get some other people on it, we'll talk about it sometimes. Like, it worked out best for both of us at the time. That time has now passed. It wasn't like we demand this to bend to our needs and our will forever. That's unreasonable. I think it was reasonable at the time where, I mean, look, I think what they're doing right now with these apps actually is somewhat reasonable in the sense that they didn't just cut everyone off today. They said months ago, you shouldn't build Twitter clients. And then now they're saying it again, don't build Twitter clients. But if you happen to have already built one, or if you happen to build one anyway, even though we told you not to, a very long time ago,
right?
We will let you grow up to this certain number. And by the way, user tokens, I'm pretty sure, to correct both you and John Siracusa, I'm pretty sure a token is a login to one account. If they're talking about the OAuth token sense, that's what that means. So if you are logged into a Twitter client with three different accounts, that's three user tokens, not one. Anyway, small tweak. But, they're giving all these limits. I mean, they really are kind of saying, look, I think the implication here is we don't like you. We can kill you whenever we want to. We're going to be nice and give you this little bit here of we will tolerate you to continue operation under these terms. And that's why, so Anil Dash had his thing where he asked Gruber, and I think he asked me too, but he at least asked Gruber, to compare this to Apple's app review thing. And I talked about this briefly in my post, so I won't go into it too much here, but it is certainly worth comparing this to app review and say, okay, well, Apple has all this power over developers, but it's kind of okay now. Like, it's considered an acceptable business to be in the App Store. No one considers that extremely high risk necessarily. But I'm arguing, and I think a lot of people are arguing now, that Twitter, developing a Twitter client is not a very good business to be in, and that is very risky and possibly has a very limited future. And I think the reason why is because the incentives are completely different here. That Apple does want to keep controlling the App Store, certainly, and they will. And Apple will find ways to do that. But and I said in my post that Apple has been consistent in their App Store, in the kind of rules that they make for the App Store. And a lot of people attacked me for that already. But what I mean by that is you can generally, even though they have added rules over time, in reality, they really haven't added that many. And all the rules they've added, for the most part, have been not surprising. You know, all of Apple's rules that they've added have been like, well, yeah, okay, we kind of figured that would probably happen. Or like, oh yeah, we used to be selling things in our app with credit cards, and now they won't let us. They have to use in-app purchase. Well, that's not that big of a surprise. You know, like that's how Apple likes things. Of course, they were going to require that rule. Like there have been very, very few times when Apple has really surprised people with what is a rule, and you know, what is allowed and what isn't allowed. And I'm not saying it's never happened, but it's very rarely happened. And in the 4 years? Oh my God. Yeah. In the 4 years the App Store has been running, we really haven't been surprised. Apple has not like radically changed direction. And whereas Twitter is not that stable. Twitter is unstable and unreliable in their policies towards apps that are developing their platform. Because for a while, they wanted people doing things like Twitter clients. When they were smaller, they liked it because that was boosting them. Now it's not. And now they're saying, hey, you know what? Screw everybody. We'll take this back for all these other reasons. And by the way, as I said earlier, their reasons for taking back control are good reasons for them. Like that, it does make sense why they need to take back control. So I'm not faulting them for that, really. What I'm saying, though, is that this is a very different environment from the App Store for developers. Twitter has been extremely inconsistent and keeps like taking these turns in their policies. Apple has been fairly consistent. And then furthermore, the incentives are so different between the two companies. Apple needs third-party apps. Third-party apps boost the value of Apple's platform immensely. Apple needs them. And furthermore, Apple loves the kind of apps that are things that they're not going to do themselves. There's a lot of value for Apple's platform apps that do things that Apple will never do. So there's very little competition there. And even when there is competition, I mean, Apple wanted to do reading things later. So they did. They added that to Safari. I'm still in business. They didn't say, you know what, you aren't allowed to be in business anymore. And I was never scared. People often would email me back when the rumor started first circulating that they were going to add Instapaper-like features. I got a number of emails from people saying, aren't you scared that they're going to now prohibit you under the replicates existing functionality
right.
rule? And I that never even crossed my mind because that's not how they work. That they really don't do that for the most part. I think they did it once with that command tab replacement for OS X. Remember that? What was that?
Oh, anyway. Yeah.
Light switch or something like
light
that?
Light switch, anyway, yeah.
Is that it? Yeah, they did it once for that. And I still don't necessarily know if we know the whole story to that. But anyway, I don't know. I was never concerned that they would do that to me, and they haven't. In fact, since they took my feature, you know, since they did it themselves, they've actually promoted Instapaper more. They've you know, the Starbucks thing is arranged through Apple. That was there. They've featured me in the App Store numerous times since then. Obviously, this is not in Apple's cards to do that to people. You know, they'll copy your feature, but they'll still let you sell your app too, and that's fine. Twitter clients are by far, I think, the most value that you can add on top of Twitter. So you have like, there are all their other three quadrants worth of apps where they say these are all pretty much okay. Although even that I think is nuanced and full of exceptions. It's like, it's okay until you start taking too much value out, like Instagram. But, you know, I think the kind of apps they're attacking here very clearly are Twitter clients. The reason why Twitter is so against these things is because they're in competition with Twitter directly. They directly are competing with Twitter for people's attention and for people's usage of the front end. So there is never going to be a time in Twitter's business where they're going to be encouraged to promote third-party clients again. Because now they're big enough, they don't give a crap about the small fringe amount of growth. Like I bet most new Twitter users are probably using their official clients. So, you know, the growth aspect is now pretty much gone, or you know, they're past it in their life stage. And you know, they don't really care about geeks because, you know, we're whiny, fickle people, so you know, and we're low profit. So they don't really care about us. All these clients are really just competing with Twitter. So that relationship is never going to be good.
I think Apple, that's an excellent point to make, Mark, is that Twitter considers these guys, absolutely considers these guys competitors.
And they are. Because they are competing for control of the front end and right. People's attention. Apple is not in that position with the App Store. Apple is not in the business of making sure you use their mail client or their web browser. You know, it helps them a little bit, but that really, it doesn't matter too much to them. As long as you're still buying an iPhone, they don't really care what you run on it for the most part. And I know there are exceptions, please email Dan, but in general, that's how it works, like in the big picture. Whereas Twitter is the opposite. Twitter, in general, they do very much care if you're using a third-party client, and they really don't like you to do that because that's going to hurt them more in the long run. So I think it was a good question to raise. I will say to Anil Dash, that was a good question to ask about comparing this to the App Store. However, I think upon thinking about it, I think it's not a comparison at all. That it's, the situation is very, very different because the incentives are totally different and the way these two companies have behaved has been totally different. Any more sponsors?
Yeah, we can do another one. Sure.
Let's do one more.
I'll always have one.
Yeah.
It's one I've told you about before, hover.com. Simplified.
Love them.
Domain management. That's all you got to know. I could stop the thing right there. Just stop right there. That's it.
But it's a registrar that doesn't suck. That's all you need to know.
It's actually a really good way to say it. Obviously, you can do the traditional domains there, .com, .net. But I like the .co. There's still a lot of those left, .tv. And they make it really easy to do all of the stuff that you want to do, such as registering the domain, renewing the domain, transferring the domain, all of the things that should sound really simple to do. With other registrars, they are often very difficult. Why? Because the other registrars, they don't really want you to register the domains. I mean, sure, you've got to do that. They want to upsell you on all of these other services that are out there. They have a million checkboxes. You've got to make sure you see them all. You've got to search for the tiny little link that says, skip this step and go to the next step. Hover does not do this. Hover gives you a search box. You type in the domain, or if you don't know the domain you want, or if you're not sure it's available, you just type in a phrase or some keywords and it will show you alternatives. It will show you options. Click the plus box and you check out. You want to use PayPal? You can use PayPal, credit card, whatever. They also do DNS management. They do email hosting. They do a ton of stuff. And use my code here and you'll get 10% off anything, everything that you do there. The code is Dan sent me, one word. You can just visit hover.com/Dan sent me, or you can type in Dan sent me anytime in that checkout process where it asks you for a coupon. And that's it. And if you have a problem or if you want to transfer domain from another registrar and you don't want to go through the hassle of like how to do that, they will do it. And they don't charge you anything for this. They have a no-hold policy, an 800 number on the front of their site. Call them. Say, I want to transfer my old domain. No, they'll just do it for you. It's an incredibly cool service. Real people. Great people. Hover.com/Dan sent me. Check them out.
You see Apple's at $660?
Wow.
This is crazy.
Yeah, that's coming on the heels of the
dividend, I guess. Yeah. Right? Or there had to be something else.
Well, there rumors surrounding the iPad Junior and the new iPhone.
Yeah.
Everyone else is low. Twitter. Everyone else is low. Apple's up by 2% right now.
All right, a couple more things about Twitter, and then I hope this will probably wrap up this topic
forever until the next Twitter API update.
Until they tell us what their other changes will be, because right. Unless it's so open. And I cannot wait to hear if we ever get the chance to hear this. And I think give it a 50-50 chance that we'll ever actually hear the result of this. But I would love to hear what exactly Twitter wants people to do when they hit their 100,000 limit. Like when it says that for Twitter to come work with us, and so we can identify areas of value.
What does that mean? What does it mean? Work with us?
I really hope that. After after a few months and this is all blown over, I really hope that one of the clients that does hit this limit eventually reveals like what that was like.
Because the terms of receiving Twitter's working with of their help will be, of course, that you cannot discuss it.
Of course. But yeah, like so we'll maybe never after know. One of those companies goes belly up, maybe leak out. Maybe there'll be like some Quora answer in 3 years where somebody tells the whole story.
Yeah.
I would love to know what exactly that means. And areas, we can identify areas of value. Oh, God.
That actually is probably the most frightening aspect of what they did, because what it really means is like, do you really want the eye of Sauron to see you kind of thing? Do you really want that to happen? And the answer would be no, you don't want to get close. I interpreted that as a warning. That's saying
that's
get close.
Huge warning.
Yeah. I mean, it's really
that's
scary.
A warning saying, yeah, it's so mafia. It's like, what Syracuse is like, you better not get too successful. it's just the whole thing. It's just creepy. This is why I'm saying that's not a good business to be in, because, well, I mean, maybe today it is, but and a lot of people are saying or speculating that the area of value will be that Twitter will start asking for money from the app developers. I don't think that's it. Again, that amount of money is not going to mean crap to Twitter. I think it's about control. It's all about control. They don't want Twitterific to pay them $1 per user or something like that. That's a drop in the bucket. That would actually... I was about to say that would probably crush Twitterific and Twitter wouldn't notice, but maybe that is what they want. But yeah. No, I mean, like they're not doing that to extract money out of app developers. They're doing that to control them even more. That's the whole point. They don't give a crap about taking like $100,000 from a Twitter client developer. That really is not their goal at all. So anyway, all this is to say, anyway, so, okay, how, let's, moving on to a slightly related topic, how this affects Instapaper is worth talking about.
Yeah,
briefly.
Let's hear it.
I mentioned on Twitter back, like right after this announcement came out, I think it was a Thursday evening, whenever it was, I mentioned that I would probably have to restructure Instapaper's liked by friends browsing feature if I wanted it to comply with their new rules. And that is an if. But what this means is there's a rule, I forget the number, I think it's in the timeline section, but there's a rule that you aren't allowed to effectively interleave a tweet timeline with content that's not from Twitter. So what this means basically is you can't interleave a tweet timeline with other people's timelines or with other posts throughout. So you couldn't, for instance, build a complying client that combined app.net posts and tweets into one unified timeline. That's prohibited. Same thing with, not just app.net. You couldn't combine Facebook posts. Now, one thing is Tumblr used to have a feature like this. I wrote it. We had a feature back in the day that I'm pretty sure is no longer there. I looked for it and couldn't find it. I'm pretty sure it ended, but it had a lot of problems anyway. But we built a feature where you could use your Tumblr dashboard as your Twitter client as well. And what it would do, it would read your tweet timelines from the Twitter API, and it would create little post bubbles that looked like Tumblr posts, but were actually Twitter posts. and it would interleave them into your dashboard so that you could browse Tumblr and Twitter together in one unified timeline. Now, this is problematic for a lot of reasons. One of the biggest ones, and this is true if you're thinking about evading this rule anyway and making like an app.net slash Twitter combined client, one of the biggest problems with this is, what do you do when there's a gap in a timeline when they come in? And basically what this means is, like, what if you refresh the feed to app.net every 10 minutes because there isn't a real-time feed yet or something like that, right? What do you do if people have already browsed past the point where something that just came in needs to go in the timeline? Where do you put it? Like, do they just miss it? Or do you put it up like in arrival order, but then it's not in chronological order? Like, it's a weird problem to solve. What if one of the services APIs failed to send you a response one time? So you have like this 10 minute gap in the timeline where there's nothing from this API, same situation. Like, then, once you get that data, what do? Do you shove it back so the user will see it, or what? Like, it's weird. There's a lot of little weird problems like that. But that feature would no longer be permitted now under these new rules. And that's the same. Oh, and by the way, I should also point out that when I wrote that feature, what I was thinking in my head was, I don't want to use Twitter on their website. I want to keep using Tumblr because that's what I'm used to and that's what I like better. So let me see if I can extract value out of Twitter as much as possible while giving them very little value. That was the point. So that the point was that I could browse Twitter without using Twitter. And that's exactly what they don't want to happen.
Yeah.
And I can't blame them. You
were their worst nightmare.
That is a terrible customer for them. That's exactly what they don't want. But that's what clients do. And especially something like this that like combines it with another service. Like, that was probably the problem with LinkedIn. I bet that's what caused them to block LinkedIn. And now, the reason this affects Instapaper is probably the same reason it affected Flipboard. And we're going to see what happens there. You know, the Flipboard CEO was on Twitter's board until last week. And he stepped down.
Yeah, after, to get out of there.
Yeah, after apparently a long period of friction with the company. I suspect that the Twitter support in Flipboard is probably going to be significantly reduced or changed in the near future as a result of whatever caused that friction, which is probably this. Instapaper's browse articles liked by friends feature basically does that timeline combining. I will fetch links that your Instapaper friends, which are all crawled from these networks, that your Instapaper friends have posted to either Facebook, Tumblr, or Twitter. And I integrate those all into one timeline of, here's all the recent links that your friends have posted on whatever services you've connected to Instapaper of these three. And Twitter is the most popular one of those services for people using Instapaper. It has edged out Facebook by a good amount, not by double or anything, but by a good margin that it's probably going to stay there for a while. So I'm going to have, if this rule means what I'm pretty sure it does, which is you can't interleave tweets with other timelines, I have to remove that feature, or I have to restructure it. So I have to have like a separate screen for just Twitter and then other screens for Facebook and Tumblr. But then I might not be able to do that because they might not even let me combine, like maybe I can't even mirror the feature with other services. Who knows? So I might not even be able to have Twitter support in that feature anymore. We'll see how this plays out. I also might be too small for them to notice, but who knows? We'll see what happens there. But that's what I was talking about, that kind of use is prohibited. And I'm pretty sure Flipboard does things that would hit that as well. Anyway, I think that's all I have to say about Twitter. You wanna end it now?
I think we
did an all Twitter show. I think app.net, I think there's a lot to talk about there, but
somebody asked you on app.net, or maybe you were just participating in the conversation that If the features of Twitter, like the retweeting, favoriting, and all that, if all of that stuff was suddenly on app.net, would you abandon Twitter? Are you planning to abandon Twitter?
No.
You're going to stay, and you'll stay in both places.
What brought me to Twitter in the first place, I was late to Twitter, as I've said before. And actually, the reason I created my Twitter account was to test out that Tumblr feature. But the reason why I wasn't on Twitter before is because the people I wanted to follow were all on Tumblr. And eventually, Twitter got enough people on there that I wanted to follow that I said, okay, fine, I'll start using both. And that's why I started using Twitter so much, is because it got a large number of people there who I wanted to follow, many of whom were not on Tumblr at the time. Now, app.net is going to have, I'm going to have the same pattern there, which is right now, there are some people on there I want to follow. However, most of them also use Twitter. Most of them also use Twitter more than they use app.net. So for now, I don't really have a lot of reason to use it, a lot of motivation to use it, because the people who I'm following and talking to and being talked at from are by far mostly on Twitter. You know, right now I have on app.net something like, don't we have like 1,000 followers?
You've got more than that now. You've got more than that now. You can follow Marco.
Twitter.
You're just Marco on there. You've got 1,954. Syracusa has 1,752.
Okay, so I have on Twitter, I just checked, I have like 44,000 on Twitter.
Yeah.
So, I admit that the app number is bigger than I thought it would be. But still, like, there's a lot more happening on Twitter right now. And
don't you feel that if you were to say, I am done with Twitter now, I'll still do updates and stuff like that, but my conversations and my thinking and my discussions, I'm taking them over to app.net. Don't you think that that would kind of help solve the problem you're describing?
Not really. No. I think that would result in me leaving Twitter and everyone else continuing to just stay on Twitter. And I would just, I'd be like the one guy like trying to bring the party to another bar, and like one person comes and everyone else just stays at that bar. Like that's, I'd be that guy. I can't do that. Because to me, I get value out of Twitter. I get a lot of value out of Twitter. And I don't see that being replaced very easily. Over time, it might be. But they're going to have a lot more activity on app.net before that happens, and a lot more of the people who I want to follow. You know, because even though they have a good number of users so far, you know, I follow about 200 people on Twitter, and of those 200, I think something like 12 of them, or 20 of them, something like that, use app.net. Or rather, have accounts on app.net. I don't even know how many of them use it actively. So it's too small right now for me to want to constantly check it. And the kind of thing that would make me constantly check it, which is a really good client, doesn't exist yet. It's too young. And the kind of thing that would really help a lot would be exactly what Twitter prohibits, which is a client that interleaves tweets and app.net posts. So I can slowly migrate it. That's why they prohibit it, so that things like this can't happen.
Yeah.
So it's harder to leave their service, and it's harder to like piggyback on it and create a whole shadow service in the background or on the side that's going to steal everything away slowly. So anyway, that's I don't know how I'm going to use app.net yet. I think it's great right now. That they blew past their funding goal, and they got a lot of people. They got people using it and talking about it. I do think it would be nice if it was more different from Twitter, and I think they think so too. I'm pretty sure that's one thing they want to do, is they want to make it more different from Twitter. But ultimately, I also still have a fear that this is just one more thing that is going to do something I don't like in a few years. You know, it's still a centralized platform owned by a private company that can do whatever they want. And sure, right now we are the customers, but We don't know that's always going to be the case. And we don't know how it's going to work for them. So if a few years down the road, they say, you know what, we are having a lot of trouble. We're just not getting enough registrations to keep people interested in using it, or we're not getting enough user accounts to keep paying for what we're doing. We're just, you know, our costs weren't what we expected. They were much higher than we expected. This has been a hard year. You know, maybe this year we'll run one ad, or maybe we'll have a promotion to drive registrations so that all of you paying people will stay here and we'll renew your registrations next year. So we have to get a whole bunch of people in here at first to make it interesting enough for you to stay. So we'll have a free registration day. And what if they start doing things like that? Again, it's not about them turning evil or anything. That they might kind of be forced to. You know, we don't know that, and they don't know that. We don't know whether that's going to happen or not. And they certainly can't say. You know, no one knows what happens in the future. They might take a direction like that. They might be forced to. With all the best intentions, they still might be forced to. So we really don't know that this is definitively not going to end the way Twitter has ended for many of us, at least mood-wise, or in spirit, Twitter has ended for many of us. I really don't... There's nothing they can do to assure people that that won't happen. Just like Twitter's stupid patent agreement, where they say, oh, we won't use this in evil ways. Mm. And yeah, well, you can't really say that. there's nothing you can say that will guarantee that. Same deal with this. They can't guarantee that they will be non-evil forever. It would be nice. They probably can avoid that as long as they're in business. But we don't know, and they don't know. So I do think it's worth, rather than just everyone focusing on app.net, thinking a little harder about the problem of how could we really replace Twitter with something truly open and truly decentralized. And it's a very hard problem. You know, you can say on one hand, you can say just use RSS for things. And Dave Weiner has talked a lot about this, so I don't need to go too far into it. And that idea is very good in almost every way, except that the real-time publishing part of it is very difficult. That if you're going to have what Twitter has now, which is really the real-time web, real-time communication, where I can post something, and all these clients have the streaming API now, so I can post something and it appears within seconds on everyone else's timelines and their clients. People get alerts about it, they get DM, or they get text messages or notifications. Everything's happening in real time. That is very difficult to do on the web with open platforms, because everything is kind of this like mail is this like store and forward kind of system, and there's like things that will have certain delays, and how do you register with the network and get yourself in there? There's a lot of very tricky problems, and there have been attempts at solving them. But I think ultimately very few of them work in a way that can work nearly as well as Twitter's real-time stuff does. And that's not to say that we can't build something like that, but I do wish more people were focused on that problem. So that's worth thinking about for all the nerds for all the people who listen to this who actually are developers. That's worth thinking about. You know, what could we do there? And that, honestly, I'm more excited. I think I'd be more willing to pour effort and excitement into that than into another centralized version of Twitter. Because we don't really need another centralized service. Even if that centralized power is nicer to us, I don't think that really solves the big problem, which is that something as... Actually, I believe Matthew Panzerino wrote a big piece about this on the Next Web last week. Something as important as the real-time communication over the internet, you know, as the dominant platform for real-time communication, that level of importance should not be centralized to one authoritative company. You know, it's the Weiner theorem. You wait long enough, Dave Weiner's usually right.
But that is, it is,
he's
a scary
been saying
thing.
This for years.
It is a scary thing. Yeah, the bigs, as he calls them.
Yeah, he's been saying this for years. He's right. App.net is not going to solve that problem. App.net will solve our current problem of Twitter's being kind of mean. But it's not going to solve the problem of how do we avoid one company getting this power in the first place? And And there are a lot of things in technology where we can avoid that and a lot of things where we practically can't. Most of the internet was built on this open, decentralized nature. Email is open and decentralized. IM is not. And you know, you can kind of have these weird, you know, network you can set up yourself, but for the, but you know, the big ones people use are not. And you know, it's certainly worth thinking about. Could we have this kind of system for something like Twitter?
I say probably not.
Let's wrap it up.
All right. Bye, Marco. Well, you can follow Marco two places to follow Marco now.
Yeah, that's even more confusing.
You're on Twitter as Marco Arment, one word, Marco Arment, not Marco there. But on alpha.app.net, you are Marco. And the same exact story for me. Dan Benjamin on Twitter, Dan on the app. And to help the people, I put them into the show notes. You can go to the show notes and you can see all of the links and things that that we discussed on today's show by going to 5x5.tv/buildanalyze/91. All the links are there. Promo codes and stuff we mentioned for the sponsors, all there. So thanks very much to them for making the show possible. Marco, thank you.
Thanks, Dan.
See you next week.